Before we get into this episode, just a quick heads up that there is some cursing in it. So if you have the kids around, make sure you throw on some headphones. There is some cursing throughout the episode. Just want to give you a heads up on that. Also, please continue to support the FitCast through Patreon. You can do it starting at just $1 per episode at patreon.com/thefitcast. There you can help support the show and make sure it keeps coming to you every single week through iTunes and keep it advertising free and all that great stuff. Thank you to everyone out there that has been supporting the show. But if you've been thinking about it, please just check out the page at patreon.com/thefitcast. And like I said, starting at just $1 per episode, you can really help keep the show going and support it going forward. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy the interview with Ben Bruno. Hello and welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 308. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to have on the show for the first time someone that I've known for a long time and that you probably know not only from his awesome articles on TNation.com, his feats of strength on YouTube, and of course all the great other stuff that Ben is doing now on the West Coast, Ben Bruno. Ben, what's up, man?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me.
So you're just waking up on the sun is rising. I guess it sets on the west, but anyways, you're enjoying some nice weather out in California. Things are going pretty well out there right now.
Yeah, they're going really well.
Did you have to deal with the earthquake a couple weeks ago?
You know, I have been here for like two and a half earthquakes. One of them, like they said it was an earthquake and I didn't feel it, but I've actually slept through both earthquakes.
Wow.
So, you know, it's weird, though, because, like, one of them, I walked out in the hall just because everybody in my building was, like, absolutely freaking out. And I had fallen asleep on my couch and was just kind of like, "Ooh, I guess I'm lucky I missed it." So I have kind of yet to go through the fear of an earthquake, but I've lived through one.
Yeah, I can go ahead.
No, it's actually funny, though, because I have slept through two earthquakes now, but I am the world's not soundest sleeper ever. So, like, I'll wake up to, like, the air conditioner or, like, you know, like, a noise in the hall or a mouse or something like that. But I slept through earthquakes, so go figure.
Yeah, man, it's just one of those weird things.
Yeah, for sure.
Hell, man, I was out in Santa Monica for a little bit, and there was one earthquake that wasn't really, like, that bad. But I, like, crapped my pants. Like, I thought the world was ending. It was nuts.
Well, you know what was funny is after the biggest one, I was getting texts from people like, "Are you okay?" So I turned on the news, and then they start talking about how there's a lot of times there's an aftershock, and then I was just like, "Oh fuck! Oh fuck! Oh!" I couldn't sleep like the whole rest of the night because I was like so paranoid about this aftershock. But nothing ever happened.
Well, luckily you're all right, and Skype is still working. California did not fall into the ocean.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, this is my first podcast. I was actually thinking I might, since nobody's heard me, like fake like a British accent or like talk with a lisp or like try to be creepy or something. Be like,
yeah,
good night, mate. Or
yeah, no, you could do like the you know creepy dude from Family Guy or something like that.
Hi, Kevin. It's a great honor to be on the podcast.
Or you could have just said, "Oh, I just got done deadlifting," or
yeah, 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 exactly.
Like that guy too. Yeah, I'm never stop deadlifting. Or sorry, you could, at least you can make that joke, like, "Oh yeah, that earthquake. Sorry, I hit a PR today." Like I saw like 48 of those on like Twitter and stuff. I'm like, guys.
Oh man, you know, actually, out. I think I made one of those in full disclosure. So whatever.
Awesome, man. Well, it happens. All right, so let's get into it. And we got a ton of questions from the audience, but cool. The first thing, like we've kind of known each other for a while now. I mean, you were doing some awesome stuff and then you came to MBSC and you interned there and then you worked there for a long time. But before all that, like how did you like get into this and like what was your path to get into strength and conditioning?
I probably have one of the odder paths of a strength coach just because I actually got into lifting weights after having a back surgery, which people think is weird because I have full-blown meathead running through my veins, but I got into it all after having a back surgery. So I'll try to keep it relatively brief, but basically I went to college having no clue what the hell I wanted to do. So I just I figured that I would try to go to the best school I got into, and then when I was there, I would try to do really well in school so that when I figured out what the hell I wanted to do, I wouldn't I'd have my options open. But you know, I was just sort of going through the motions in school, not really having an idea what I wanted to do after the fact. And halfway through my sophomore year, I had a back surgery. In the lead up to that, it's whenever I tell anybody I had a back surgery now, they always just assume like it was because I was like deadlifting or like hurt my back or like lifting weights or something like that. But truthfully, I never really lifted weights prior to my back surgery. I did some training for sports and things like that, but I was actually when I was an athlete in high school, I was kind of like that athlete that people like us hate now, because like I used to like sports, but I always bullshitted my workouts. Mm-hmm. You know, like just sort of like the guy that during the workout would like go to the bathroom 10 times and like get a drink and just like fidget, then like try to, you know. I remember we used to like we had like this, the gym had like you know, those selectorized machines, and like my workout would be like, you know, actually it's funny because I've always been a leg guy. Like I've always preferred doing legs over upper body, but like my workouts would be like, you know, bullshit for a half an hour, then like put the pin on the heaviest stack and like try to get a couple reps on the leg press, and like then like, you know, bullshit for another hour kind of thing. But my whole life, I've always kind of like dealt with back pain, you know? And I don't quite know, I think a lot of it is genetic, you know? Both my parents had back issues. You know, my whole family has had back issues, and it kind of came to a head my sophomore year of college. I had several, really bad bouts of back pain, and then actually twice in the span of a week, I actually pissed my bed, which is I say it's embarrassing, but I'm not really that embarrassed. Like it kind of, you know, that's life. But so there's this one week that I pissed my bed twice, and talk about a weird feeling when you're like in college and you wake up, you're just like, holy shit. Like this is either like, you know,
you
the worst
blackout drunk.
Yeah, exactly. I was kind of like, this is either like the biggest wet dream in the history of wet dreams, or like this is really bad right now. And it was really bad right now. So then I had back surgery. And it was one of those things where I had a microdiscectomy at L5-S1. And the doctor was like, oh, yeah, this is like pretty routine. And, you know, most people are fine after this. And, you know, so I didn't really think much of it. And at the time, I actually played flag football. I was on like an intramural flag football team. And one of the kids on the team had like had a microdiscectomy, and he said he was fine after like a couple months. So I wasn't too worried about it. And, you know, my mom came down to New York. I went to school in New York City, and she stayed with me. And I just thought it would be like a week and one and done. But I had a lot of complications from the back surgery, and it didn't go as well as planned, which in hindsight, you know, I really wish that I had kind of known what I know now about the body and things to maybe try to do things to avoid the surgery. But, you know, you don't know what you don't know, so can't go back and change it. But I had these complications, and I was having a lot of trouble, you know, sitting, especially, for long periods of time. So I ended up having to take a medical leave from college. And I went back, and I was living with my mom, and in addition to just being in pain all the time, I was super bored, you know, like I didn't really have much going on. Started getting really depressed, just like sitting around all day, bored, and, you know, I couldn't drive and couldn't do stuff like that. And so, you know, I wasn't doing any activity. I wasn't eating that much because I was depressed, you know. So I, in that time too, I went from, when I had my back surgery, I was like 165 pounds. And I dropped at the lowest to 121 pounds and got, you know, it's really weak and all this kind of stuff. So as I was sort of just sitting around, I've always been like a really inquisitive person. So I started learning about different. I started reading about like back pain, and then got into like core strength and stuff like that. And then from there, I started learning about nutrition and you know, to gain weight and you know, and weight training and stuff like that. And I actually, after a while of the traditional physical therapy route, I saw this doctor in Boston, actually. His name was Dr. Rainville. And I always want to call this guy up because he really kind of changed my life without knowing it. But he has this program. I don't know if he still calls it this, but it was called Back Boot Camp. And it kind of went against everything people were telling me to do, which was basically nothing, just rest, you know? And what Back Boot Camp was, is it was a little bit more aggressive physical therapy where you were strength training, you know? You were like, we were doing, I guess you could call them deadlifts. We were like lifting, like 30 or 40 pound crates off the floor and putting them on shelves. And we were doing like lat pull downs and core stuff. You know, leg press, which is like seen as bad, but the details of the program might not be the greatest, but I was basically starting to strength train. And as I started getting stronger, I started feeling better and really just kind of caught the gym bug, I guess, from that. And when I went back to school, I just became like kind of like a full-blown gym rat. Like in the morning, right when the gym would open, I was there. You know, I was waiting at the door at like 5:45, and I would lift, and I was really into my workouts and doing everything right, and you know, trying to track everything, and just super into it. And you know, like every gym has like that morning crowd that's kind of like the morning diehards. So they're there like every morning, like clockwork. You know, and you kind of become friends with each other, even though you're not really working out together. And as I started to, you know, get into it more and started to get stronger and, you know, gain some of the weight back that I'd lost, I got a lot of questions from those people who mostly were like, just like professors and middle-aged people. 'Cause like nobody under like probably 40, except for me, like would wake up that early to work out. And so I would just kind of answer questions about like what I was doing. You know, it wasn't like personal training at all, but it was kind of just informally just telling people what I was doing to feel better and how I was getting stronger. And I would like show them my workout book and things like that. And, you know, it got to where I was spending like an hour and a half, 2 hours every morning in the gym and then going to class and just like, you know, I didn't really like what I was doing in class. Like I was, you know, I think it's telling, like I would be in class, like just zoning out, like reading like strength training articles, you know? And I kind of got to a point, I was also interning in business and I hated that. So I just kind of got to a point where I realized that what I was doing my first 2 hours of the day was my favorite part of the day. So I started thinking like, maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree with the route I'm going right now. And, it was also the time that the economy really sucked. So people were struggling to get jobs. And I kind of just thought, you know, what the hell, I'll give this a try and just be a trainer, you know? So I actually, the guy that I was interning for had two kids that played high school football. And I told him my deal and, you know, told him it was probably crazy and whatever, but he was really helpful. And he put me in touch with their trainer or strength coach or whatever. And I talked to this guy and it was just kind of one of those right place at the right time things, but he was just starting out a facility and was like, well, hell, I need some help. Why don't you help me out? So I thought that I was going to have this job working with him. So I was in my last couple months of college, I was all psyched. I thought I was going to have this job. Like 2 days before I graduated college, my mom was down for my graduation and everything like that. It was all happy. This guy calls me up and tells me that I actually no longer have a job because he had to hire his cousin. So it was like the biggest buzzkill ever, you know, and I'm like, oh, well, shit, I guess I got no job. So I ended up having to move back to my mom's house. And at that time, I was kind of like, you know, the thing is, in my mind, I thought being a trainer would be fun, but I always kind of felt like maybe it was more of a hobby than a job. You know what I mean? Like maybe I should get like a quote, like real job, you know? And so at that point, when that fell through, I said, okay, that's probably a sign from, you know, that's probably a sign that this wasn't meant to be. So I started looking at real jobs again. And, you know, as I was doing that, I was just kind of clicking around on reading strength training stuff. And I actually read something that Mike Boyle wrote. And in the bio, there was a link to, you know, the MBSC website. So I just clicked through and I saw there were internships, and I had missed the application deadline for the fall internship by like 2 months, but it was like an hour away from my house. So I just figured, you know, fuck it. I guess I'll just drive down there and see if I can get an internship. So I just drove down with a resume and, you know, basically just told them a very condensed version of what I just told you and said, you know, I really have no ostensible qualifications to be here, but I'm very passionate about it and I'm willing to work. And got the internship, and then it just kind of went from there. So that's, you know, I definitely got into it in a very circuitous fashion, but, you know, I guess it's not where you start, it's where you finish, right?
Yeah, man, like that's, it's not something I wouldn't say if you want to intern at Boyle's this fall or whatever like that, and our spots are open, start driving down here. But like you took the initiative. Like you just said, screw it. I'm just going to, you know, give it a shot. The worst thing, you know, that can happen is they say no, I turn around and drive back.
Yeah, no, exactly. You know, and I think sometimes it's like you always hear about that outlier stuff. Sometimes it's just like being in the right place at the right time. You know, you know, I thought I was going to have that other job, which turned out to be a really crappy gym. So in hindsight, I'm actually very, at the time, the guy pulled the rug out from under me and I was super bummed. And at, you know, in hindsight, it's one of the best things that ever happened to me. And, you know, with the internships, you know, like, I used to play golf and they always say, you know, I'd rather be lucky than good, but I just lucked out that the time that I asked to be an intern, there weren't a ton of people that were like applying for it and things like that. So, you know, it just sort of, you know, things aligned correctly and whatever, but, you know, long story short, that's how I kind of got into this.
So, like, in terms of, like, time frame, what was this? This is, like, 2011?
No, God, I suck with time. I don't even know what day it is.
Yeah, I'm trying to even remember.
It
seems like a long time ago now.
2010. Yeah, 2010.
That sounds right.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, you came and you interned at Boyle's, and then you ended up, you know, coming here for a couple of years. And one of the things that we got in terms of like questions and stuff like that, and maybe you can hit on that with this one as well, is like you went from, you know, basically, you know, you interned, but you're thrown right into coaching groups, and you start coaching groups, and that's, you know, one thing that you know, from you working there, like you see a lot, is that you were, you know, in love with those guys, you know, training those hockey players and stuff like that, and really getting a connection with your athletes. So what was it like just kind of being, you know, thrust into the industry, and then you start just, you know, coaching athletes right away? What was that experience like, and, you know, what did it mean to you?
Oh, I loved it, you know, because I've always been, you know, kind of a jock at heart, you know, like, you know, I'm like, for, you know, now that football season's back in store, like my happiness level, like just doubled like in the last week. You know, I'm just the type that I just love sports. I love being around sports. And I think probably like a lot of people, one of the cool things about being a strength coach to me at the when I first started was like, you know, you kind of reach that point when you're an athlete where you're either like good enough to keep playing or you're not good enough to keep playing. And I wasn't good enough to really do any sports at a high level, but it's a way to kind of still be around sports. And I was really involved in, you know, I really like training, you know, so I loved it right from the shoot. And I also, I partly went into it because when I was younger, my dad passed away when I was younger, and I always kind of found that my biggest mentors in life were kind of guys in that like, you know, 20 to 30 to 35 age range, because I really looked up to them as being cool. Like, they weren't so old that they were like lame, and they weren't so young that they were peers. You know, they're just a little bit older than me, and I would really, there are a few figures in my life that really made a big difference when I was growing up, because I looked to them for guidance, but also just not in the sense that I would like ask them for life advice, but I just kind of looked up to them. And I think that when you train high school kids, you're in that cool position of being just old enough to be a mentor, but young enough that you're still cool and they don't think you're a loser, and you can really make an impact on them, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to hit on this just again. For I know a lot of people out there that are listening, we have a lot of, you know, people that are either in the industry or they're looking to get into the industry and stuff like that. So, you know, as you were starting to get involved in, you know, the fitness business, like looking back, was there like anything that you wish you knew, you know, earlier on or anything like that?
About fitness, or, you know, yeah. It's funny because I've always kind of felt that being a trainer, I've always felt like, a lot of people really, really focus on like the X's and O's, like kind of too much about training. And it's a lot of it is just like, it's just people skills, and the skills that you need to be a good trainer are the skills you would need to be like really good at any, not any career, but any career that involves people, you know. A lot of it's just like being nice and knowing how to get the most from different kinds of people and how to relate to people so they like you and want to work for you and things like that, you know. But I think from a training perspective, it was funny because I went into Boyles, you know, I was much more like my own training evolved. Like when I first started, I kind of did like more like bodybuilding stuff. And then I went through that, like, not like powerlifter. I've never really been into like powerlifting, but I just went into that like super heavy stuff. And like I said, I'm a meathead, you know, through and through. And, I don't like see that as a put down. I actually, you know, and when I got to Boyles, I had a lot to learn, like, you know, because I always kind of divided the Boyles stuff into like two, like the Boyles workout into two parts. There's like the first stuff where it's all like the warm up and the movement, and then there's the lift. And from day one, I felt pretty confident with the lifting stuff, but everything else was foreign to me. You know, all the rolling and stretching and movement and ladders, I'd never done any of that stuff. So that was like that was probably what I learned the most while I was there, for sure.
Yeah, it's nothing like getting that first person on, or that new person on day one, trying to teach them how to do a lateral skip.
No. Like, I remember, well, when I was at Boyles, you know, like some of the coaches probably remember this. The first time I ever tried to clean was at Boyles. I cracked myself in the mouth and like bled all over the platforms.
Oh man.
My first like 3 or 4 months, I was probably the klutziest person ever on the ladders, just totally sucked, like all that kind of stuff. I was a total fish out of water.
I mean, you're like that new athlete. You're like that new athlete that comes in. This is like learning a new language, and it's trying to teach your body a whole new system of how to move. It's kind of shocking.
Yeah, for sure. But it was a really good experience. And, you know, I think it's one thing I always liked about Boyles, I think that there's a really good staff, but the staff also, like, they all kind of abide by the same basic philosophy, but amongst the staff, you know, everybody kind of has their own preferences and their own like specialties, I guess you could call it. So yeah. It's a, you know, that's a pretty cool thing. Like, you know, you always have like you know, I always say, like, in life, it's always, like, good to, like, know a guy, you know, like, when you're asking for advice, you're like, oh, I know a guy that could help with that. And at Boyles, there's, like, a guy or a girl that could, like, help with really any of the facets. So it's cool in that way.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, we have, you know, people that are, you know, RKC certified. We have people that went through massage school. We have people that, you know, are just crazy about the Olympic lifts and, you know, movement patterns and things like that. So, yeah, it is, it's a... one of the benefits of having a staff of like 20 people.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit more about, you know, kind of your path. So you're at MBSC for a while, but now you're out on the West Coast and you're doing some training and stuff out there. So like what, like for you, like what are the big differences between, you know, that, you know, being like really a personal trainer versus being a strength and conditioning coach, because it is kind of like flipping a switch between the two a little bit.
Oh, for sure. You know, in the last year, the biggest group I've trained is two people, maybe once three people, but I'm almost doing exclusively personal training now. So it's a lot different. And, you know, I really like both. It was a big adjustment becoming a personal trainer. And, you know, it's funny because I think that when you're whatever position you're in, whether you're a personal trainer or a strength coach or whatever, you can't really understand the other side of things until you do it. And it's made me realize a lot that like a lot of the stuff that you read, it's so, so important that you know the writer's background, like who they train and their whole logistics, because I think that your training philosophy is shaped so much by what you're doing, you know. And I read now and I read people that are strength coaches and I kind of get where they're coming from, but I wouldn't like necessarily do what they're doing with my personal training clients. Whereas when I was, now that I'm a personal trainer, I do a lot of things that I probably wouldn't do were I training groups, you know, and working exclusively with athletes and things like that. And so I think it's really, I actually think it's really been a great learning experience to me to be on both sides of that fence. But I would say that the biggest difference is, you know, that, like everybody always says, like coaching is like part art and part science, you know. And I think that when you're a strength coach, it's a little bit heavier on the science and a little less heavy on the art. And when you're a personal trainer, it's a lot more about the art and a little bit less about the science. Does that make sense?
No, totally. Sorry, this car is going by right now. That's me. I had to mute myself. Yeah. But it's totally what I was talking about, man.
You know, like I have to worry a lot more now. It's not so much what I say, but how I say it. And, you know, I have to worry about like being a little nicer and how I can get through to people. You know, and then the other big thing that I think that a lot of people might miss the boat on is when you're a personal trainer, it's really not about you at all and how you enjoy training or what you think is the right way to do things. It's about your clients. And so, you know, if I see eight people in a day, I might have eight different goals, you know? Even for example, when you're a personal trainer, the other thing is like, it's funny because when you read about strength and conditioning, almost everything you read is like geared towards performance, but almost every client that comes to you as a personal trainer cares about their physique like 95% and mm-hmm. everything else is like 5%, you know?
They just want the show. They don't care about the go.
Yeah, they don't care about the go. And you know, I'm the type like I think that the, you know, I'm still a performance-oriented trainer, even if you have physique goals. But, you know, I read stuff online like, you know, it's not about, you know, it's almost like sacrilegious in strength and conditioning to talk about like muscles instead of movements or things like that, you know? Like you can't say, hey, I'm doing this for chest. But every personal training client you ever have will say, hey, like, let's do chest or let's do abs or, you know, things like that. And if you don't speak that language, you're not going to be able to relate to them, you know? So the way I speak amongst my peers is very different than the way I would speak to my clients and things like that, you know? Like,
you're not going to be like, yeah, we're going to be doing some horizontal pushing today.
yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, for sure. You know? And so, that's a big part of it is how you communicate with people and also realizing – you know, even amongst physique, it's kind of like beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Like, you know, and everybody has a different idea of what looks good, you know, both women and men, you know, like, I'm like 5'9" on a good day, more like 5'8" to be honest, but, and like, I weigh like 185 pounds. Now, sometimes, you know, like out here, a lot of my male clients will be like, you know, I want to put on muscle, but I don't want to be as big as you. Like, they think I'm huge. You know, they'll talk about me being huge or jacked or, you know, I don't want to be that big. If I go on like T-Nation or like whatever, people are like, do you even lift? Like, you're like a skinny pussy. Like, you know, so it's like everything's relative, you know? And so you have to realize that with a personal trainer. Some women really embrace a little bit of muscle and looking more muscular, whereas some women don't want any muscle. And it's when you're a personal trainer, it's not your job to determine what their goal is. It's your job to help them get to where they want to be, you know?
Damn, that's a good way to put it, because like you hear so many, I mean, oh God, like I always talk about like hitting Facebook these days, just because people are like, you know, this is how women should look today. Like, women should look, you know, strong. They should look, you know, muscular. But what if they don't want to? Like, if they don't want to.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so, you know, we train accordingly. Like, I don't, you know, not all my.
But you're still like,
client.
You're not using 2 pound dumbbells. You're still lifting.
No. With your, yeah, of course. Yeah. We're still lifting, but it's very different, you know? Yeah. And a lot of it, like, I sometimes joke that my job as a trainer, like I'm like, they should just call me Captain Obvious. Cause I feel like a lot of being a trainer is like just doing like the common sense stuff that, like, you know, most people just don't abide by common sense. Like, you know, like, and a lot of I'm so simple, it's unbelievable. When I show you my programs, you know, it's like, that's it, you know? And I'm like, yeah, that's it, you know? You know, I'm just a, you know, so but I think those are probably the biggest differences of being a trainer and a strength coach. You know, I like both, you know. I'm really enjoying being a personal trainer right now, but you know, I also like being a strength coach, so
Well, let's talk about some training stuff, because we got like I said, we got a bunch of stuff in from the audience, and let's go to this first one from Jake, who just wanted to know, like, you know, dude, let's be real, like if people haven't seen like Ben's videos, like he lifts a shit ton of weight. So with that being said, you know, that's going to have some wear and tear on your joints and stuff like that, you know, unless you're, you know, taking care of yourself. So he wants to know, like, what are your, like, your pro tips for joint-friendly training, or just, you know, tips for longevity and injury prevention and stuff like that?
Well, so I want to first preface that, because I think that when you first start out with training, it's a good idea to just follow very basic progressive overload, you know? I don't really do any fancy periodization, to be honest with most people. It's just kind of, you know, I joke that I call it, you know, the top secret plus five system of periodization, you know, try to add 5 pounds every time, and over time it adds up. But I think that for most people, that like simple progressive overload reaches a point where you either stall out because your progress stalls, or you start to break down, you know? And I think a lot of times people argue about, is this exercise dangerous or is that exercise dangerous? But I actually think that any exercise that you do that you progress very, very far and are doing very heavy weights and things like that is dangerous, you know? You could do, you know, we like to talk about single leg work being safer than back squats, but you can't tell me that, you know, a 300-pound Bulgarian split squat is safe. You know, it might be safer than an alternative, but there's still dangers. And, you know, when you're strong, every exercise is dangerous, you know, has some inherent risk. Again, it's kind of, like I said, it's common sense. So I think that once you hit that point where simple progressive overload isn't cutting it anymore and you're starting to break down, you have to kind of change your game plan and use progressive overload via other means than just weight increase every week, you know? You know, I love simple programs like 5-3-1, but after you get to a certain strength level, you can't just like keep going up all the time if you have you couldn't just go up on squats every week if you had like bad knees or a bad back. Like you're going to just break down, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that it behooves you to do other stuff. So like I like to like I'll do a lot of stuff for and again, it kind of depends on these questions are always tough to answer because one thing that I think that I see a lot is people argue, is this exercise dangerous? Is that exercise dangerous? And I think you kind of have to put it in context more and realize that like some exercise, like it kind of depends what your injury is. Like if you have a back issue, you know, I might tell you to do certain training modifications, but those might actually in turn put more stress on your knees. So if you have a knee issue, those might not be the best training modifications, you know? But I think that just as general tips, like I think I tend to live in like rather than going like super heavy, myself and my clients very rarely go below like 6 reps on really anything. And more actually we kind of live in that like 8 to 12 rep range. And for me, it's not so much about, you know, like if you look in the certification textbooks, it'll say this many reps is strength, this many reps is whatever, and 8 to 12 is, you know, hypertrophy. For me, it's more like a matter of just like kind of safety and logistics. Like I feel like when you live in that 8 to 12 range, it's kind of the sweet spot for muscle building, joint health, things like that. So I don't really, I think the biggest thing when you're dealing with injuries is just kind of let go of your ego. And not really, try not to test yourself. Just try to live in that 8 to 12 range and just steadily progress, you know? So
it's like that thing of just like, keep it simple. Don't be an idiot and like throw an extra 20 pounds on the bar when you just got crushed on 225.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. You know, so it's you know, I'm still a strength guy, but I think that if you get strong in moderate rep ranges, it's much easier on your body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that would be a big thing. I think the other big thing is just avoiding whatever exercises constantly bother you. And again, it doesn't matter like what an article says is dangerous or not. If something always bugs you, just don't do it and do something else, you know? And, if you're feeling a little iffy on a certain day, like don't go for it that day. You know, I always say, I wrote this article once, like tips for like working around injuries. I don't remember what it was called, but the last point in there was kind of like, listen to your own advice. And my point was this, like you could probably always tell like your friend or if you're a trainer, your client or like your family member or something, how like common sense tips to avoid injuries or like not be an idiot, but lifters are stubborn and myself included, you know, and it's just hard to listen to your own advice, you know, and so you end up doing stuff that just doesn't make sense. And I do it all the time, you know, like I spend my day telling people how to be more safe in the gym, and then I close up for the day and go do stupid shit in the gym and hurt myself, you know. I actually finished that article by saying, you know, my point was listen to your own advice. And I finished by saying, you know, I actually wish someone else wrote this article so I might actually learn something, you know? And it's like, I think the main thing is just try to apply a heavy dose of like common sense to what you're doing. And if you have a shoulder injury, don't be doing, you know, heavy dips and heavy bench press and things like that. Or if you're, you know, things like that, it's hard to be more specific on a question like this, but let's just leave it there.
Yeah, but there's tons of good stuff in there, and like you said, it's like we're as strength coaches or trainers and stuff like that, like we're the worst clients. Because like,
for sure,
not
for
just
sure.
Because we're stubborn, but we also have like almost, and it's like any time you get that client or that athlete that has too much information, that might actually know, you know, a little bit, so they can kind of you know, say, I saw someone did this, and you know, why aren't we doing this instead? And then you get
an argument
and stuff.
Los Angeles is the worst for that. Every day it's like
a new workout or something like that,
hey,
or a new diet.
I'm on this new juice cleanse, or I'm on this new vegan cleanse, or like Dr. Oz told me if I do this, it's going to be like my saving grace.
He talks, or he only spouts the truth, man. Like Dr. Oz, he wasn't in front of a jury.
No,
you know.
LA is home to the cheesiest fashion trends. Some of the stuff is you just look and you're like, what the hell?
So how do you deal with that? Like, do you like have to, you know, when you get a client or anything like that, do they come up to you and say like, hey, you know, so what should I be doing for nutrition? And how do you address that stuff?
Yeah, well like here's the thing. You kind of have to feel it out. It's different for every client. You have to see who's open and who's not. And, you know, I actually take a very different approach to that side of things than a lot of people. Like, for example, you'll see a lot of bashing of things like long distance running or CrossFit or like, you know, yoga and things like that. And people will take a very hard line. I'm of the belief, like, if I have a client that comes into me and is also doing stuff that I might not approve of, but they enjoy it, I don't want to say never, but I almost never really tell them to stop. Instead, what I try to do is I just try to focus on myself, and rather than bash what they're doing because they enjoy it, I more just try to tell them how I think I can help them and ask them to give me, you know, 2 to 3 months of 2 to 3 days a week in the gym. And I think that most of the time that works really well because people start to feel better and then kind of just naturally phase out of the other stuff they were doing. But I don't like the approach of shit talking what people enjoy. You know, because I, like, for example, I use myself as an example. I sometimes do things that are, you know, it's questionable if they're smart or not in the gym, you know, like maybe lift too much weight or things like that, but it's just what I like doing. And sometimes I'll talk to physical therapists that just go, oh, well, you just shouldn't do that. And I look at them and I'm like, yeah, but dude, it's like what I like doing. It's like what brings me joy in life. I'm not going to stop, you know? And, you know, when, on the other hand, when I have a physical therapist that is like, hey, you know, here's how we can fix things so that when you're doing what you're doing, you're not going to hurt yourself. Well, then I can get down with that. And then I like that guy and I'm open to that guy and I'm willing to do what he says and things like that, you know? But if he just tells me to stop doing what I'm doing, I shut him out and I just want to see somebody else. And I feel like as a trainer, I always try to live by the golden rule. So when somebody comes to me and they like a certain thing, whether it be CrossFit or distance running or whatever that I don't really like, I don't really shit talk it. I just kind of say, okay, cool. Like, just let's do this for 2 to 3 months. You know, because they're coming to me 2 to 3 times a week, they're doing whatever else they're doing 2 to 3 less times a week. And my goal then is to kind of just like sell them on what I'm doing without really ever selling them, you know? But I don't like to, I think it's not a great move to tell people that what they're doing is stupid, you know? And, you know, truthfully, I think too, basic strength training, when you haven't done it for a while, allows you to do a lot of that other stuff more safely. You know, like people get hurt all the time, distance running or doing CrossFit, or, you know, some people get hurt doing yoga, whatever. But I think that once you develop good strength and good movement patterns and stuff from the stuff that we do, you're less apt to get hurt doing that other stuff. So, you know, if somebody enjoys running and I get them a little bit stronger to where they can run pain free, then cool. I don't care if they want to run, you know? So that's more the approach I take.
Very cool. Let's get in some more questions from the audience out there. We did get a couple questions, so I'm going to kind of lump these into one. Just like, you know, general strategies and things like that when you do hit a plateau, whether it's like, you know, deadlifting or benching or whatever.
I like to abide by the, I think probably the best thing to do is, when you hit a plateau, it could be from the first thing is you just might be like tired, you know, and you might need to take a, you know, I like to tell people to take a week off all the time and just do nothing, you know, and usually you come back stronger. If you've been training for a long time, that's usually my first thing to say is just like take a week off, and that fixes a lot of stuff. The other thing is would just be rotating exercises. And I think rotating exercises, I don't like to do it too often. Like I don't do like the West Side style of rotating every week, but I think like every, you know, 3 to 6 weeks, it's a good idea to just rotate exercises without rotating too drastically. So I kind of abide by the idea of like similar but different. So, you know, if you were doing, you know, chin-ups, you switch to pull-ups, or if you're doing, front squats, maybe you switch the rep range or you switch the tempo a little bit, or you do like, you know, maybe you shorten the rest periods and lighten up the weight a little, or you just do different things while doing the same basic movements. So it's not really that big of a change, but it's just enough to kind of keep from stalling out. And I think the stronger you get, the more that you tend to stall out, so the more variety you need. In the beginning, I don't really change things up that much with beginners. I feel like that basic plus five system that I was talking about works pretty well for a really long time of just kind of keeping things consistent and getting really good at the basics. But once you're more advanced and already have a very good foundation of strength, I think that you tend to stall out more and need to introduce some variety.
Yeah, it's interesting, just talking about, just getting good at the basics to start off with and then start worrying about all the other stuff later on. But with you, like, are there any signs that you see, like, with yourself or with your clients that are like, yeah, maybe we should deload next week and just make sure we take a step back? Are there any kind of signs that you look for?
You know, this might be different than some people. I hardly ever deload with my clients when they come to the gym, because I feel like a lot of the talk about advanced periodization and stuff just doesn't apply to real world lifters. I feel like the line that I always use is that life provides its own periodization. But for me, people are always going on vacations. They're always taking a break. Their kid gets sick, whatever. And so there's kind of built in breaks in life. And so when they come to me, for the most part, the time that my clients are with me is the only time they exercise. So when they're there, we train. And, that being said, if somebody comes in on a particular day and is just super tired or achy, we'll do an easier workout. But I never do plan deloads. And I actually don't do them with myself either, because my lifting schedule, I'd like to tell you that I have like some awesome lifting program and it's like, you know, a top priority in my life. But if I'm being honest, like I just kind of, you know, shit happens where I have to skip a workout here and there, and, you know, I'm about to work out and somebody invites me out to dinner. And to me, like, life's too short to miss out on fun life opportunities to work out. So I'll skip the workout and then I'll do it the next day and things like that. So I never really kind of plan deloads. So that might be a little different than some people, but that's how I do it.
Another thing I want to ask you about, if people aren't checking out, Ben, what's your YouTube channel again? What's the URL for that?
Oh God, I can't.
I had it up like a little while ago.
I regret it's when I first started my YouTube, I thought it was like that whole thing, how people don't like to give their credit card info. I didn't want to use my name cause I thought that would be weird, and now I'm regretting it, but it's, it's my initials and my birthday. So it's BRB082985.
Okay, we'll throw it in the show notes too, yeah, in case people want to check it out, but just so they can check out some of your videos. And I bring that up because you are, you know, not only known for your like your feats of strength, but also like your creativity when creating like new ways to, you know, train, like you said, like get in that variety and stuff like that and throw in a new movement and stuff like that. So if you had to pick a couple, like two or three of like your favorite exercises that you've come up with or that people have, you know, really, you know, grabbed onto, what would you pick?
I would definitely pick single leg RDLs and reverse lunges with the landmine. And I'm on this kick of trying to bring certain landmine exercises more to the mainstream, because I feel like I love the idea of single leg RDLs, but I also think that 99.9% of people just totally suck at single leg RDLs. And it's you watch them, you know, it's very like there's a few people here and there that can crush heavy weight, and you kind of look and you go, that's cool. But then most people just suck at them, you know, even people that are really good at single leg exercises, they just struggle with the balance. And it's hard to get much of a training effect for the posterior chain. You know, I had one client and I really liked what she said, but she said, you know, she was doing them with a dumbbell one time, and she was like, I feel like this is more of a sobriety test than an exercise. And I kind of chuckled, because that's sort of what it looks like with most people. You can get a lot of people, even strong people, and they just blow at single leg RDLs. And using the landmine has been a really good way for me to get people. There's just enough stability in the landmine that they can do it well, and it really cleans up the movement and get a, you know, and from there you're able to actually get a good training effect for the posterior chain, you know. And I've used it all the way with very, very strong football and hockey players with quite a bit of weight on the bar. So that's my favorite way to do single leg RDLs, and something I use with almost all my clients. And then also I really like reverse lunges with the landmine. And I like that because I think that I especially like them if you have like valve slides or a slide board or something and can do sliding lunges. Because I think that lunges are typically very, very hard on the knees. And the cool thing about the landmine is that you're able, you know, the best way that I think you can train around knee pain is to try to keep in mind the idea of a vertical shin or a vertical tibia. And in a regular lunge, it's damn near impossible to keep a vertical shin. But when you're using the landmine itself, you can load the landmine, so it serves as a load, but it also functions as a counterbalance where it kind of comes forward a little bit, so you're able to sit farther back than you could in a normal lunge and make it more hip dominant. So you can, I really like it for strong people that as a way to take stress off the knees in single leg work. And I also really, really like it for people, you know, mostly women that are trying to make the exercise more hip dominant to work their butt more than their quads. So that's, those are probably the two that I really, really like. And, you know, I'm always happy when I see people starting to do them more.
So since we're kind of running out of time, the first, the last question I want to get to before we start wrapping up, actually, let's pause for a second. We got one more question that I want to talk to you about, Ben, but before we do, like, just to since we talked about YouTube and stuff like that, where can people check out your stuff? Is still benbruno.com the best place to go for all Ben Bruno related material?
I guess, yeah. You know, I've sucked with my blog since I moved. Like, I've probably blogged like twice in the last year, so I can't promise great stuff on there. But I have like a Facebook fitness page and like Twitter and things like that that I use more often. And I keep saying that I'm going to try to write more, but you know, yeah. You could go to my website, but you know, it hasn't been too much recently.
Well, you also got Ben Bruno 1 on Twitter.
Yeah.
And like Ben said, yeah, if you go to Facebook, just type in Ben Bruno and you can find his fan page too.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Cool. All right. So last thing we're going to talk about, got to talk about the glutes, man. So, you know, in terms of like glute training and stuff like that, that is one of the big requests from clients these days is, you know, obviously, you know, more females than males, but now making sure that you're getting those glutes firing on all cylinders. So, you know, what are your go-to exercises when it comes to, you know, just getting those glutes to where you want them to be? Or I should say, actually, this is a question that I should have rephrased better because this is how it was originally submitted. Best glute exercises for people with low back issues.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's actually different then.
Yeah, way different.
Yeah. I would say for people with low back issues, I tend to not push heavy deadlifts and heavy squats and things like that. Again, kind of common sense. I'll still do squats and deadlifts, but it might be like, you know, lighter goblet squats, really focusing on going through a full range of motion, or like, you know, kettlebell sumo deadlifts. I've actually found that light sumo deadlifts with very strict form are great for building up the glutes and a lot less stress on the back than like a conventional deadlift or something like that. But again, I don't really push the loading. I really love more bridging variations. Like my favorite, I really like shoulder elevated hip thrusts, and particularly the single leg hip thrusts. I like both of those. I really like, those would be my two main. Bridging, I think, is kind of the ticket when you have back issues. You know, glute bridge variations, hip thrust variations. I like kettlebell sumo deadlifts, again, done, you know, with very strict form. I like Romanian deadlifts, and then I like a lot of single leg stuff, like I was just saying, the sliding reverse lunge with the val slides or the slide board. That's a great way to make the lunge more hip dominant and really bias the glutes without a lot of loading, so that's easy on the back. I like Bulgarian split squats, and I especially like doing them from a little bit of a deficit to increase the range of motion, assuming that you have the mobility to do that. That takes some of the need for loading away, so there's less load, and I think it does a better job of getting the glutes. Those would all be things I would say. The main thing, again, is just common sense. Like if you have low back issues, don't be trying to chase PRs on deadlifts and squats. You know, I think single leg work and bridging variations are going to be a more prudent long-term solution.
Super cool. So let's, what I'd love for the audience out there to do, I want you to digest this. I want you to take this because I'd love to have you back on, Ben, to talk a little bit more about stuff. And this is kind of like for at least the FitCast audience, if you don't know Ben, now you do, and you know where he's coming from and a lot of this stuff. So
if you don't know, now you know.
Exactly. And that's, to be honest, that's the next thing next time we record, I want to talk. All right, man, we're throwing on a playlist because we used to, like Ben and I used to lift together a lot, and Ben would always have the best selection of music, like, you know, no country music, just straight up like nice, you know,
hell
90s
no.
hip hop.
Hell no. Yeah. No,
So let's we'll table it for now, and for everyone out there, don't forget to check out Ben's stuff at benbruno.com and at benbruno1 on Twitter. You can get him on there as well, and of course on Facebook, and we'll have links for all this stuff, including his YouTube page, in the show notes. But other than that, Ben, thank you for taking the time and for letting the sun rise while talking on Skype out there in California. We'll definitely talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, man.